Everyone. So I'm Rowan. I am 26 years old. And I know Peter through voice. This is my first time speaking at a church that I haven't been to before, so that's a new experience for me. I've enjoyed being here so far. I enjoyed the songs that Paul wrote too. They're quite cool. So today I'll be talking a bit about myself, so that you can figure out whether or not you should listen to what I say. Peter suggested I talk about myself. He said Brian Harris, who's the principal at Voice, said, "Why should people listen to you if they don't know who you are?" Which I suppose that could be a valid point. And then I'm also going to talk a bit about the kind of people that God speaks and works through. So hopefully you get something out of today. And I'm just going to open with a psalm, which is part of Psalm 139, verses 13 to 16, which is up there. Yeah. So, "You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." So now I'm going to tell you a bit about myself. I was born into a Christian home. My dad has been a public servant for a long time, first in customs and then in the tax office. But don't worry, he only gets the people with lots of money that try and evade tax. So, and he's also a talented musician. He plays guitar and is a good singer too. My mom grew up in the country, so she's a farm girl, and she's done nursing for quite a number of years. But is now studying a PhD on covert aggression in schools because she's a school nurse. And lots of kids go to the school nurse when they're trying to avoid situations that they're not comfortable in. So, I'm the second of four children. My older brother James is very intelligent. He taught himself to program when he was 12. And he taught himself Japanese. He's currently got a high-paying job in Tokyo and is married with two kids. My sister Rihanna, who's my youngest, I've got two younger siblings. Rihanna is also very smart. She skipped year two. She got put up. And she's got the travel bug, so she spent a lot of time in Europe, especially Italy, since she's studied Italian at uni. And she's also a wedding photographer. And my little brother, Scott, is very athletic. He's good-looking enough, so much so that the school he went to had them on all of their advertisements for about 10 years. we called him the face of Kerry. And he's also a Whopper graduate. He's just graduated from Whopper studying jazz drums, and he's just got married as well. Also, if you're curious, Melissa and I have been married for almost 7 months. I've gone to church my whole life. My family went to Kelmscott Westminster Presbyterian Church till I was about 10. It's a hard thing to pronounce, Westminster Presbyterian. And then we went to Kerry Baptist Community Church. And when I was 18, God told me to leave Kerry. This was the first time I'd heard God speak to me in such a clear way, and it's still, a very unusual thing for me. So then I went and checked out a bunch of churches, ended up at Gateway's Reformed Church in Coburn for about a year, and then settled at Armadale Congregational Church for about 5 years. Or maybe most people here have, I don't know. But if you haven't heard of the Congregational denomination, it's one of the ones that joined the Uniting Church, but some of them didn't. Same with Presbyterian, actually, so there you go. When I met Melissa, I started going to her family's house church, which is a bit of a different experience, and while still continuing at the Cong, which is how people at Armidale Congregational refer to it. And then when we got engaged, I moved out of home and we started attending South Perth Baptist, which is where we are now. So I've got a bit of a diverse church background. And a bit about my walk with God. When I was in primary school, I wanted to be a carpenter and a singing preacher. My mum tells me that she thinks it's because at the Westminster Presbyterian Church, the pastor would sing into the microphone while people were singing songs. So maybe that's why I wanted to be a singing preacher. I started taking my faith a bit more seriously in my late teens. I read the Bible from end to end in my own time. I got baptized at the age of 18, and people started commenting on my enthusiasm for learning about Scripture, which I didn't think that was, you know, different, but apparently I was a bit more interested in than some people are. While I don't doubt that God has had his hand on me for my whole life, I first heard him speak in a very clear way at the age of 18, which was when he told me to leave Kerry. And at the age of 21, I had a very tangible experience of the Holy Spirit, and God impressed a number of significant truths upon my heart. I haven't really had anything like that since then. It was a bit of a, whoa, what's going on? After this, I started learning biblical Greek and studying under a godly teacher. In the process, I became convinced that God has called me to a teaching ministry within the church. And this is a conviction which has been confirmed in a number of different ways. I eventually ended up at Vos Seminary, studying a Master of Divinity, of which I have 1 year remaining. If you haven't heard of that kind of course before, it does sound a bit like you're training to be a wizard, but it's just like a graduate Bachelor of Theology. And in the future, I hope to do a PhD on some aspect of the doctrine of the Trinity. And on a non-related note, as you've seen, I can also juggle. So you've just heard a carefully curated version of my life, made to make me sound godly and gifted. While everything I said is true, it's as though I painted a picture-perfect portrait of myself that draws attention to my most attractive features and fails to represent any of my flaws. Did anyone notice I was doing that? Or is that just, you know, that's normal? That's how we normally operate, right? Would you listen to someone who introduced themselves like that? And why or why not? Yeah. Okay.
Hang on. The problem with this, Rowan, is that once you start us talking...
Yeah, I was warned.
Hi, Rowan. It sounded like verbal Facebook posts.
Yeah.
And we all know that people put their best up on Facebook, and if someone is actually really honest and tells the... I'm not saying what you said wasn't true, but if people put their raw side up, it takes their audience out of their comfort zone. Mm. And would I listen to someone who spoke like a verbal Facebook post? Well, I probably would, but I might fall asleep at some stage. Whereas I think something about faith is about going outside your comfort zone. So hearing the raw stuff may make you a little more engaging, if I can put it that way.
I was thinking, when is he going to start talking about when he dropped the ball?
Yeah. When I what? Oh, when I dropped the ball. Right.
I was going to say, that sounds like a fairly typical academic introduction to a guest speaker, but I'm interested in what they've really got to say. So I'm sort of sitting going, yeah, okay, we've got that bit out of the way. Now let's get on with the real stuff.
Okay, maybe one more person.
Rowan, I'm very happy for that. It's where you go next. Are you going to talk about yourself for the rest of the time? Then obviously I want to hear more. But if you want to then lead that into some of your rich understanding of Jesus or something like that, I'll accept what you've done. It's given me a framework for understanding where you've come from, a bit of your family. It's beginning a relationship with you. But really then I'd like you to move on to something that's that I'm also interested in hearing from you.
Okay. So what I would like to suggest today, I think we're all on the same page, is that God doesn't tend to speak or work through picture-perfect people. You know, people might give that idea that, oh, actually, I'm picture-perfect. I'm you know, there's nothing wrong with me. But I think God somehow speaks and works with and through broken people in a broken world. So I'm going to do me, about me, take two. I've just got a little preface before that. So before I do this, because I'm about to highlight some of the less fortunate aspects of my story, I'd like to acknowledge the fact that I have been privileged in a number of ways, including being born in Australia, in a middle-class family, and to have grown up in a Christian context. I'm very thankful for my family, my church community, and my faith. Also, please think careful before repeating any of the things I'm about to tell you, because not all of it is common knowledge. Don't worry, it's not too intense. and I'm going to start with a different psalm. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and in whose spirit is no deceit. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped, as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I'll confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. So here goes. I was born into a Christian home. My parents, my dad was raised by his grandma because he had an absent father and abusive mother. And she died 2 weeks before I was born. So I didn't get named for about 2 months because that was pretty hard for him. My mom tends to avoid conflict and has a conservative, legalistic church background. There was a decent amount of conflict in my parents' marriage when I was growing up. I don't actually remember much of it. Apparently my older brother does. And I've been told that given my dad's background, it's miraculous that their marriage has held together and that dad has been able to hold a full-time job down, let alone for an extended period of time. Concerning my siblings, while they're very high achievers, their lives aren't problem-free either. Sadly, two of them are no longer Christians. One of them also has serious health problems, and the other is no longer living with their spouse. Concerning the churches I've been to, my family left Kelmscott Westminster Presbyterian Church when I was 10 because they found the culture there to be quite legalistic and oppressive. During my time at Kerry, there was conflict between the pastoral staff, which resulted in one pastor leaving. I wasn't really old enough to know what was going on at the time, but this was a difficult time for the Kerry community. I left Gateway's Reformed Church after a year because I found it hard to get to know all but a handful of people there. By the time I left, I was only attending church when I was rostered on to play bass, and that was the extent of my involvement in church community at the time. Towards the end of my time at Armidale Congregational Church, there was conflict between the senior pastor, the school board, and the church elders. Factions formed, and a number of people ended up leaving. This was quite a distressing time for the church's community, including myself. And despite being over 100 years old, South Perth Baptist is currently only a small congregation of maybe about 30. The church was replanted about 5 years ago because it was in dire straits, but by the grace of God, it is starting to grow again. Yeah, and my walk with God, one day after school, in primary school, I came home and told my mum that I didn't think I'd sinned all day. Well, this might not sound bad to you. From my perspective, it betrays a serious misunderstanding of the gospel. I can also remember being reluctant to tell some people the name of the school I went to because it had the word Christian in it. I sort of tried to say, because I went to Dale Christian School, tried to say, I went to Dale School to people in Dale Hockey Club. That's what happens when you live in Armidale, I guess. As a teenager, I was never given the talk by my dad, and as such was left to figure those sorts of things out myself. This didn't work very well. If any of you are dads, make sure you give the talk to your son and daughter, I suppose. Or get your wife to do that, maybe. Also, from around the age of 14, I started playing excessive amounts of computer games and continued to do so through to my early 20s. Such that, for example, when I was at Whopper, sometimes I would do 30 minutes of practice, an hour of computer games, 30 minutes of practice, an hour of computer games, and so on and so forth. It was pretty bad. One day I sat down to pray and felt that I should delete all my computer games. I've since had a few major relapses and numerous minor ones. In fact, oh wait, I skipped something. It's been taking a long time to learn how to function, especially to rest, without games as a normal part of my life. And this is a journey which I'm still on. In fact, on Wednesday I had some things to do, but they seemed hard and I was tired. So instead of doing my work, I downloaded a few games on my phone and played them all day. So, you know, I can be a bit slack and avoid things that are hard. Although, don't we all, perhaps? More recently, I often find it difficult to spend time with God. I've found aspects of my studies at VOS to be quite challenging to my faith. And it's not that unusual for me to fill hours with negative procrastination when my tasks for the day seem too hard. It's one of the downsides of studying at home, I guess. Should try and get into the library more often. So, once again, I'll ask you, would you listen to someone who introduced themselves like that, and why or why not? Yeah. Okay.
She said, because you're being real.
Yeah. Okay. Would.
And also because you're trusting us with that.
Hmm.
That's a gift to us.
Hmm.
So every part of me wants to listen and feels like I want to return what you're doing.
Hmm. Okay. So no one thinks, oh, this guy must be incompetent, he really sucks at life, why should we listen to him?
Ryan, I also knew some of the backstory of quite a few of the churches you mentioned, and I thought, what's going on here? Each of those, and my folks live in Armidale, and I know some of the politics of that suburb and, okay. and church there. So to not have mentioned any of that, either you've glided through like a Mount Pleasant Baptist life where you're just totally protected from the real world and you just play drums and bass, or you've bumped into a whole bunch of stuff. And my guess was that the real story was still coming. And of course I would listen to you with take two.
Okay. That's kind of affirming. righto. Okay, you can have one more. Yeah.
I'm afraid my reaction was to say, playing computer games isn't necessarily a sin. It actually helped our son get his present work, so sometimes it leads to unexpected things.
I don't think computer games are inherently evil, but, you know, they can be a problem. Okay, so now I have a question which you probably already are on the same page as me, but I'll ask it anyway. Is it only me that's like this, Or is this a more universal problem? I just have a few quick examples. First is Martin Luther. He was a strong force for good. He rejected the claims of the Catholic Church at the time that freedom from God's punishment for sin could be bought with money, known as indulgences. He translated scripture from Latin, which is like the academic language, I suppose, of the time, into German so that it could be understood by common German people. He also refused to compromise his beliefs despite excommunication from the church and the very, very real possibility of death. But he was by no means perfect. Luther's later writings demonstrated a strong hatred for Jews. He argued that the homes and synagogues of Jews should be destroyed, their money should be taken from them, and they should have no personal freedom. Luther had a number of feuds with other reformers over doctrinal disputes. These debates often included coarse language, attacks on his opponent's character, or even physical violence. Luther thought that anyone who believed that anyone should be able to speak in a church meeting deserved to die. So that's if you don't believe in the, what do they call it? The priests and the laity? I can't remember. And he held some controversial views on marriage, which I'm not going to tell you because you'll get distracted. You can look it up on Wikipedia if you want. Actually, I don't think that one was there, but anyway. And Luther also attempted to remove the books of Hebrews, James, Jude, and Revelation from the biblical canon because he didn't like them. So Luther did some good things, and God definitely worked through him, but he wasn't perfect. Really quickly, I'll also look at King David. Concerning David, God says, according to Acts, I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He will carry out my will in its entirety. But David was obviously not a great father, as he looked the other way when his son Amnon forced himself upon David's daughter Tamar, and his son Absalom led a revolt against David. David himself also committed adultery with Bathsheba and had her husband killed. So he is a man after God's own heart, but had some less desirable attributes as well. So King David, who traditionally speaking is the author of the Psalms, many of which are widely regarded to be prophetic in nature, was a man after God's own heart, and yet also by no means perfect. Martin Luther, who was one of the founding members of the Protestant Reformation, was a man who was greatly used by God, and yet at the same time was by no means perfect. And I, one who supposedly has been called to a teaching ministry within the church, am seeking to serve God with my words and deeds, and yet I too am by no means perfect and surrounded by broken people in a broken world. So, there are a number of different implications that come from what I've presented so far today, but we don't have time to explore them all. So, I'm just going to focus on a few points, and then I'm going to, hopefully this will work, get you to form small groups and consider a few questions. Here's some of the implications of what we've sort of talked about so far today. First, God's people recognize their own sinfulness and their need for Jesus' sacrifice. And we see this in 1 John 1:8, where it says, "If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us." Similarly, God's people recognize their own weakness and their need for God's empowerment. We also see this in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 to 31. "Consider your own call, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were powerful. Not many of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God. He is the source of your life in Christ Jesus, who became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, in order that, as is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. These two observations also go the other way. First, be wary of people who are not willing to recognize their own sinfulness and refuse to admit fault. In fact, in the New Testament... And similarly, be wary of people whose confidence is in their own strength and whose faith is in their own ability. In fact, in the New Testament, a lot of the people who were causing problems for the early church were those who put confidence in themselves, and also sometimes people who claim to be sinless. Take, for example, 2 Corinthians, where the Corinthian church's understanding of the gospel was being undermined by super apostles who claimed to be superior to Paul in knowledge and ability. Now, this does not mean that God's people should be content to live in sin and weakness, as I'm sure you'll all agree, but rather that despite our best efforts, we will always need Jesus' sacrifice for as long as we live, and we will always need God's help to fulfill our calling. And something that follows from these observations is that we should be careful not to put people on a pedestal. If no one is without sin and everyone is weak and needs God's help, then we would be foolish if we treated someone as though they were perfect and faultless. This counts for historical figures, such as Luther or David, and it counts for present people, including well-known pastors, world leaders, celebrities, and even romantic interests. Only God is holy and all-knowing and all-powerful, and Jesus is the only human to walk the earth without sin. Be careful not to unwittingly put someone else in Jesus' place. Jesus is your one true teacher, and his Spirit is your powerful help. And lastly, as a balancing statement, while we shouldn't put people on a pedestal, and Jesus is our one true teacher, remember that God tends to speak to us through one another. And God uses sinful and weak people like me and like you to fulfill his purposes on the present earth. Well, fulfill his present purposes on the earth, sorry. So now what I'd like you to do, if we think this works... Yeah, run out of time. Okay.
I'm wondering if we can just do something else.
Yeah.
That just might help, whether there's an opportunity just for another couple of minutes, just for some reflections from people.
Yeah. I might just quickly get people to read the questions. Yeah. So
whether it'll just give people, if people just want to have a couple of moments of reflection.
Yeah.
And maybe talk to someone next to them, and then we just have some reflections back.
Yeah, but I will just quickly get people to read the questions. So are you, and you know, you can reflect on these on your own in your own time if you want. Are you able to recognize your own sinfulness and your need for God's forgiveness? Are you able to recognize your own weakness and your need for God's help? Have you had any experiences with people who cannot recognize their own sinfulness or weakness? That might be a good one if you have to share with people who might not have, because they can be pretty damaging people if you don't know what to look for. Have you put anyone on a pedestal? Have you put anyone in the place of Jesus in your life? And are you open to God speaking to you through other people, even sinful and weak people? Yeah, I don't really know what you guys want to do now.
Would it be? Are there people who just have some reflections on what Rowan has been talking about. Let's just take a moment. If you just wanted to quickly have a conversation with someone next to you, and then let's just have some reflections over the next couple of minutes. So just take a moment to reflect, talk to someone next to you if you want to, and then we'll just have questions or comments. Okay, everyone, can we come back together again? And let's just have some comments or questions from people. Ken.
Okay, I'll go first. It struck me that Jesus was a sinner in our eyes. That's why we kill him. And that's why we keep on killing Christ, is because Jesus is a sinner in our eyes. And I have no problem with that. Jesus, being fully human, did stuff that people didn't like and therefore judged him as being a sinner. And maybe we do the same thing with others as well. So maybe one of the things Jesus might have a problem with is us placing him on a pedestal. just a thought.
We'll pray for you, Ken.
Yeah. Hi, guys. Just thinking, it's funny, I was thinking about this sort of thing in a different way last night, that if we put somebody on a pedestal, or we decide to pay attention to somebody according to how together they are or how far they've advanced in the journey of life or something, we miss a huge amount, you know, because a person who's struggled from down here to there has obviously got something to teach us wherever we are. Yeah, and so you miss out on learning from people who've got so much to teach you because of, even though they don't look like they got their act together, and vice versa.
Great, thanks, Paul. Yeah, anyone else? Yeah, Elise.
I have two thoughts. One, it might be useful to have the question time PowerPoint emailed out to the MHCC, just so. Because it is the sort of thing that you can reflect on during the week. So if you're happy for us to have those questions, that would be great.
Yeah, he's very happy.
The other, Tony and I were just talking about the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt being something, the sin that you do, versus shame being, I am bad. And I think, yeah, we talked about the fact that there's more capacity to change and feel empowered by guilt versus shame, which can be completely demoralising and leads to a whole heap of other really unhelpful kind of spaces.
Any other comments, questions of Rowan?
They're good questions, Rowan.
Thank you.
thing that strikes me is a lot of church cultures actually encourage people not to be weak, and I'm wondering why that is the case, because I agree with all of the things you say, and there's plenty of examples in the Bible, including Apostle Paul is another one who admitted to being weak, but many modern church cultures, certainly in the last few decades, have just completely eschewed that side of human nature. And I think there's places still that if you stood up and said what you said to us today, they wouldn't listen to you then, because they would think, they would deem you weren't fit to listen to.
Just last one from Mike.
By contrast, if you were to have started off by telling us of some really big, serious, you know, spectacular badness in your life, we'd be quite prepared to listen to you, because we'd be looking for the end story about how you've been redeemed and so forth. I think big badness is much more interesting to people than small badness. But the small badness is just the reality that we all have. I mean, everybody who has that story of coming to Christ and turning their life around has the rest of their life to get on with all the small badness that creeps up on you in the meantime, that follows on after that. And that's the bit that we don't tend to dwell upon, because perhaps it's just a less satisfying story, and yet it is the story of all of us.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Rowan. Thank you very much.